Hello and welcome to the show. It's Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, how I hope you were with me last week. That's all. I just hope you were here. We had Grow Grassroots, Michael O'Brien, founder and principal of Mob Advocacy. He knows how to bring people to your cause with grassroots advocacy. How do you activate people? What are grass tops? We talked about that. And how do you engage those people? Where do you go to meet potential coalition partners? And what's the added value for your work around grassroots advocacy? And Divine Devices, desktops, laptops, tablets, and handhelds. Scott Kegler had tips for picking the right device to fit your budget, your work style, and personality. You know him. He's the editor of Nonprofit Technology News and our monthly tech contributor, of course. This week, campaign volunteers. Rich Foss, he's the author of Greenlight Fundraising. He and I are going to talk about the importance of volunteer leadership in your campaign, how to recruit your chair and lead donor, and the other volunteers you need in place, and what their jobs are. And he has lots of descriptions and other resources that will go up on LinkedIn and Facebook after the show today. And fiscal sponsorships, our legal team, Gene Takagi and Emily Chan from the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group, make sense of this complicated relationship, what it is, why your office might become a sponsor or sponsoree, and what that looks like and how to get started. Between the guests on Tony's Take Two, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. You've heard that already today. My blog this week is to encourage you to listen to the show. And since that's a paradox, I'll have some other things to talk about, other ways to connect on Tony's Take Two. Here's the first one, of course, hashtag Nonprofit Radio to join the conversation with us on Twitter. Right now we take a break, and when we return, it's campaign volunteers, and Rich Foss will join me. I hope you stay here.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Join the Metaphysical Center of New Jersey and the Association for Higher Awareness for two exciting events this fall, live, just minutes from New York City in Pompton Plains, New Jersey. Dr. Judith Orloff will address her bestseller, Emotional Freedom, and Greg Braden will discuss his latest book, Deep Truth, Living on the Edge. Are you ready for 12-21-12? Save the dates. Judith Orloff, October 18th, and Greg Braden, November 9th and 10th. For early bird tickets, visit metaphysicalcenterofnewjersey.org or ahanj.net.
Hi, I'm Dana.
And I'm Don.
We are certified mediators, and I am a family and couples licensed therapist and author of Please Don't Buy Me Ice Cream.
Our show, New Beginnings, is about helping you and your family recover financially and emotionally and start the beginning of your life.
We'll answer your questions on divorce, family court, co-parenting, personal development, new relationships, blending families, and more.
Dana and I will bring you to a place of empowerment and belief that even though marriages may end, families are forever.
Join us every Monday starting September 10th at 10 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome back. Live listener love going out, New Bern, North Carolina. Oh, how I miss North Carolina. I haven't been there for a few months, but I will be there soon, September. Welcome, New Bern. And we've got more live listener love as the show goes on. Right now, my guest is Rich Foss. He's the author of Greenlight Fundraising, your sustainable fundraising guide to raising $50,000 to $500,000 a year to light up the eyes of people you serve and your donors. I hope the book is shorter than its title, Rich. He's been in fundraising over 29 years as both staff and a consultant. He's with me from rural Illinois, where he is the leader of a Mennonite community. Rich Foss, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony. I'm really glad to be here today.
It's my pleasure to have you. We're talking about campaign volunteers. What's the role of volunteers in a campaign?
Well, in my career, I've worked with community nonprofits, and usually there's only one or two development staff. And so I really wanted to develop a system that could be a multiplier for staff, and also that could really use the gold standard of fundraising, which is you raise a lot more money when you sit down face-to-face with somebody and describe the organization and ask them for a gift face-to-face. And so basically I developed a system where you recruit volunteers and have them sit down with face-to-face with people and ask them for gifts for your nonprofit. And the nonprofits that have developed or have adopted it, it's been very successful for them.
Now, we have Drug in Jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, and I hate to do it to you in this very first segment, but you said volunteers are multipliers for the charity. What does that mean?
Basically, what it means is that a development director, even if they go out and ask for gifts face-to-face, can only meet with so many people each week or each year. And if you have a group of passionate volunteers, they can meet with a lot more people in a much shorter period of time. And that's why I call it a multiplier.
Okay. All right, so early parole from Drug in Jail, but watch your step. You don't want a second offense while you're on parole. I've heard that it's really, I mean, volunteers, and I've had guests say this, volunteers are the leaders of the campaign. Is that, do you believe that over rather than the staff of the charity?
Definitely. And that's why in setting up this system, the very first step is to recruit the campaign chairperson, who you want to have a very influential person in your community be the campaign chairperson, because their leadership will influence a lot of other people to join your campaign. And so that leadership role is extremely important.
Okay, and we're going to have some time to talk about how to recruit that campaign chair as well as some other volunteers.
Sure.
But what's the role of the charity's staff in all this then, if the campaign is being led by volunteers?
Well, basically I describe it, the role of the campaign staff is, particularly development staff, mm-hmm. is to run the system. Sometimes I liken these campaigns to, like an iPad. The iPad screen is very simple. And yet behind it, there's a whole lot of details. Well, what you want to do in these campaigns is to create the systems and the details in such a way that it's very easy for the volunteers to do their work. And so that requires a lot of work, a lot of organizational detail, a lot of work on the part of the development staff.
Okay. Now, you've been doing this for nearly 30 years, so you can't always have been likening this to iPad. What did you used to liken it to, the old Pong game? Or what did you used to liken it to 29 years ago?
Oh.
Okay. No.
Well, no. I didn't have any metaphors until
okay.
iPad.
Maybe it was the Brother typewriter.
When
you push the half space key. What I love about those typewriters, you know, there's no, there didn't used to be an exclamation mark on typewriters. I'm sure you remember that, right?
Right. Yeah.
You had to do a period and then a backspace and then an apostrophe to get an exclamation mark. And that's my theory is why they're overused now, because there is an exclamation key. But that's a little bit of a digression, I suppose.
Yeah.
We have just a couple minutes before we take a break. Let's
sure.
see. So the staff is doing the systems. I mean, they're basically supporting the volunteer leadership. Then is
correct.
That is that
correct?
Do I have that right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, before we can do the campaign chair, your advice is that there be a pre-campaign committee.
Correct.
I didn't want to spend too much time on that, but just like a minute and a half before a break, tell us about the pre-campaign committee.
Okay. Basically, you know, a lot of community nonprofits, their boards don't get formed based on fundraising. And so when I developed the system, I decided that we needed to have a group that was focused right on fundraising. And so generally what you do in the pre-campaign committee, you get together the executive director, maybe past board members, current board members, people who are influential, the most influential people in your community that are connected to your organization, form that campaign committee, because basically it takes influential people to recruit influential people. And so that pre-campaign committee gets together and identifies, okay, who are the top five people that could serve in our community that could serve in that role of campaign chairperson.
Now, of course, if you put Dick Cheney on your pre-campaign committee, then he's going to want to be campaign chair.
Well, if you're lucky, there might be somebody on your pre-campaign committee who could serve as chair. But especially in the first year, you want to go after the absolutely best person in your community, because that's going to make your campaign sustainable, because you want to do this every year.
Okay, Rich,
and
we have to.
If you've got the best person first, it works much better the next year.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about the pre-campaign committee leading into the campaign chair. Stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back. We've got more live listener love going out to Massachusetts, Spencer, Massachusetts, and Nahant, Massachusetts. Welcome to the broadcast. We're with Rich Foss, and we're talking about campaign volunteers. Rich Foss, you probably don't want to talk about fiscal sponsorship, do you?
Not my area of expertise.
Yeah, I don't even particularly. I'm not looking forward to it. But we do want to talk about campaign volunteers. And we're in our pre-campaign committee. So this group of community leaders is assembled to choose the people who would be good prospects for the campaign chair?
Correct.
Okay. And you did say that the pre-campaign committee should include the executive director of the charity?
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Is that really the only, should that be the only staff person, employee of the charity?
Often the development director will also be a part of it.
Okay. And then other people who are prominent in the campaign, in the community.
In the community.
Okay.
Correct.
So what's their process as they narrow down the prospects? How do they move toward asking somebody?
Basically, what they do is the first thing they do is identify probably five possible people and then rank them. And basically, I suggest this because I learned from my mistakes. The very first campaign that I was involved with, we identified the best person, asked that person, and they said no. And that happened four times.
Oh, yeah. And so that's a lot of disappointment for a committee of mostly volunteers.
That's right. That's right.
It's very disconcerting.
And the fifth person said yes and ended up to be a very good campaign chairperson.
So what was the lesson from that?
Yes, I learned from that. Identify five people right away, rank them, and that way, if somebody says no, you don't have to push the panic button and say,
okay, your committee of volunteers is not disillusioned.
That's right.
They know
that's
they've got others to go to. Okay.
That's right.
And you have some pretty specific advice about this process and even the meeting with the candidates.
Yeah. The recruiting of volunteers is really, really serious business. Mm-hmm. And I had a son who played Division I basketball, in fact, Colgate University. And so I got to see firsthand the basketball recruiting process. And, boy, those guys are highly organized. And the same charities have to do the same thing. They have to plan things out very carefully. And basically you have to identify, okay, who's going to, on this pre-camp committee, who's the best person to invite the person to a breakfast or lunch where they can be approached. Who's the best person to ask them to be the campaign chairperson? And so there's a lot of details that you need to have planned out ahead of time.
And you're doing this for each of your five candidates?
Yes. Well, you do it for the first one. And and then, you know, if you have to go to the second one, then you do it.
Okay.
You do it.
But all planned? I mean, do you even recommend people sort of role-playing or any kind of mock meetings to talk about, okay, you're going to say this and she's going to say that, et cetera?
I don't know if you need to do the role-playing, but you need to identify who's going to say what, you know, so that the reason you involve the executive director is you need to have someone who can describe the nonprofit and also who can tell a powerful story about the work of the nonprofit. And so you basically need to figure out the roles before you set up the meeting.
Okay. And at what point should you share the sort of job description of the campaign chair with the prospect?
Well, I would do it verbally during the meeting, and then at the end of the meeting, just give them the job description.
Okay.
And you don't want them to read it during the meeting, but you want them to have something to refer to when they're considering it.
And Rich has a model job description for the campaign chair, and lots of other helpful resources. We're going to mention a couple of them, but you'll find a whole list of them around this topic of campaign volunteers on my on the LinkedIn group for the show, and also on the show's Facebook page after the show. Those will be posted. And Rich, who should be the person to actually make the ask at the meeting? Should that be the person who's the closest to them, or should it be the executive director, or how do you decide who actually says, we invite you to be our campaign chair?
You basically need to ask who is the most influential person in terms of who's this prospective campaign chairperson? Who are they most likely to say yes to?
Ah, okay. And that's
the pre-campaign committee simply asks that question and hashes it out among them. And that's the person who asks them.
Okay. And around a gift expectation for the campaign chair, certainly the person's going to lead a campaign, they have to give.
Correct.
What do you
Correct.
Like to see in terms
Correct.
Of asking telling them what the charity's expectation is around
Sure.
that?
In an ideal world, they would give the lead gift. That's not going to happen.
If we lived in an ideal world, you'd be on a much better show than this. So we know that that's out. Okay.
And I would be much more fluent. The most important thing is influence, not the giving ability. Of course, you want them to give. You'd prefer to get them to give a major gift. They clearly have to give. But they may not be able to give at the lead gift level.
Okay.
But their primary role is to be the chief influencer in the campaign. So if they're involved, you want everyone to say, wow, this is an important event or important campaign in our community because this person is involved.
Oh, I see. Okay. And also, they become the person that it's hard for other people to say no to, right?
That's right.
Because they're going to be responsible for recruiting other volunteers.
Correct.
And asking people for gifts. So say a little about that.
Okay. The campaign chairperson will be responsible for recruiting the division chairs. And that's going to vary from community to community. In a larger city, you might do it by, you know, geography or, you know, by a suburb or by industry. That's sort of the part of the planning process. But whatever divisions you come up with, there needs to be a chairperson for that division. And you want your campaign chairperson to recruit them.
Okay, right. And you want to make that somebody that it's hard to say no to.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
so right. So let's spend a little time. By the way, just listeners, I'm talking to Rich Foss. He's the author of Greenlight Fundraising. We're talking about the use of volunteers in your campaign. And Rich, why don't you tell people where they can find your book?
Greenlightfundraising.org.
Okay. Greenlightfundraising.org. Let's talk now, since you're starting to lead us there, but you're not taking over the show, which some guests get a little presumptuous, take over the show. You're not taking over the show. I appreciate that.
I'll follow your lead.
Yeah, you're in trouble. we're going off a cliff. Let's talk. You started to broaden to a bigger staff of volunteers. Say a little more besides the division heads. What should this broader volunteer cadre look like?
Okay. One of the things that the development director needs to do is to develop a gift chart. And the gift chart basically says what level of gifts need to be asked for and received in order to achieve the goal. And then there are once you have that, you can identify the number of volunteers you do. And it's I won't go into all this process, but basically, for every gift you need three prospects.
Right. Okay.
And you want your volunteers to ask five people for gifts. So
this is higher mathematics now. Okay.
It's just a matter of mathematics.
Each volunteer. No, it's higher math for me anyway. So every volunteer has to ask five people.
That's right.
Okay.
And that's right.
Okay.
And so you can figure, based on your gift chart, you can figure out that you need to talk to so many prospects in order to meet your goal, and you divide that by five, and then you know your number of volunteers that you need.
Okay. And that's another one of the resources that we have. Isn't that in the list that
Correct.
You gave me? Okay.
There's an Excel spreadsheet that has a gift chart in it, and it also includes the breakdown of volunteers you need.
Okay, excellent. And again, you'll find those on the LinkedIn group for the show and also the Facebook page, and then those are links back to Rich's site. Now, we like to see volunteers recruiting their own teams. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Rather than having them imposed by the staff?
That's right. Basically, because you know, this is all volunteers doing it, and they're going to have to, the team leaders are going to have to, do some gentle pushing to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be able to do that much better with people that they know, their friends. And so you want to strongly encourage them to recruit people that they know and like and trust.
Now, the charity is putting a lot of faith and trust and like into its volunteers. I mean, there really are giving a lot of responsibility to this volunteer cadre.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the the important roles that particularly the development director does is build strong relationships with the campaign leaders, so that the campaign leaders know that they're going to have the support of the staff, and it really gives them confidence in their work, and that kind of flows through the whole campaign.
Okay, it's just the important point that this really is a delegation to the volunteers.
It is.
Yeah.
And, okay. And part of what happens is that, you know, I emphasize over and over again, is you have to tell the stories of your nonprofit, because these dramatic stories of either lives transformed or also of the needs that the nonprofit is meeting really energizes the volunteers and gives them really meaning and purpose in what they're doing.
We have a segment on the next show. My guest is Rochelle Charetz, and she's going to talk a lot about storytelling in the second half of next week's show.
Great. Because I would really encourage people to listen to that, because stories are just absolutely essential when working with volunteers.
Rich, what is it that you love about fundraising?
It's seeing lives transformed. You know, I've had so many people, you know, talk to me over the years and say things like, "Man, I can't do that." You know, that's begging. For me, it's not begging. You know, I tell people, you know, a panhandler begs. A fundraiser transforms lives.
Yes. Give us a story. Tell a little story about some life that you've seen transformed, or lives.
Yeah, I was actually influenced in developing this model by doing a capital campaign. And when I did this capital campaign, I was working for an organization that provided services to people with developmental disabilities. And there were about 70 people that we had living in a nursing home. And we wanted to shut that nursing home down and make it possible for them to live in small group homes. And there was one guy particularly, and I won't give his name, but I would talk to him, and any time this topic came up, he'd say, "You know me, I like peace and quiet." And he was living in an extremely noisy nursing home, you know. And I remember we did this campaign, you know, it was a tremendous undertaking for the organization, never done a campaign before, raised mm-hmm. $1.2 million in a community of, you know, 7,000 people.
My, yeah.
And I went and visited him in his new home. And that was so moving,
yeah.
You know, to see him, you know, getting the peace and quiet that he had long, he probably lived in this nursing home for 20 years or so,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to see his life, how it was changed, was just amazing.
Just by having a quiet environment, very touching.
Yeah, yeah.
Rich, we have just a minute left, and I'm going to hold you to that, but
sure.
Can you tell us what lesson that we might all take from the Mennonite community around fundraising?
The Mennonites not only do fundraising, but they are also very action-oriented. One of our services called Mennonite Disaster Service. And so Mennonites from all over the U.S. will go to places where tornadoes go through, hurricanes, and they'll clean up.
Yeah.
You know, they were down Louisiana.
In New Orleans?
New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, helping clean
Katrina.
Up. And I remember hearing the stories of, you know, the incredible work that they did. I had a good friend who was down there.
We have to stop there, Rich.
Sure.
Rich Foss is joining us from rural Illinois, where he's the leader of a Mennonite community. He's the author of Greenlight Fundraising, which you'll find at greenlightfundraising.org. Rich, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. I really appreciate being here today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay.
Now we take a break, and when we return, it's Tony's Take Two, a little more live listener love, and then Gene and Emily on fiscal sponsorships.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Join the Metaphysical Center of New Jersey and the Association for Higher Awareness for two exciting events this fall, live, just minutes from New York City in Pompton Plains, New Jersey. Dr. Judith Orloff will address her bestseller, Emotional Freedom, and Greg Braden will discuss his latest book, Deep Truth, Living on the Edge. Are you ready for 12-21-12? Save the dates. Judith Orloff, October 18th, and Greg Braden, November 9th and 10th. For early bird tickets, visit metaphysicalcenterofnewjersey.org or ahanj.net.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
I'm Ken Berger of Charity Navigator, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%.
Welcome back. We got live listener love going out to Laurel, Maryland, and also Malaysia. I don't know which city in Malaysia, but Laurel, Maryland, Malaysia, welcome. Tony's Take Two. My blog this week encourages people to listen to the show. You are obviously already past that. So I have the advanced course for you. Want you to know that I continue the conversation from the show in the LinkedIn group. Last week, I had a follow-up question for Michael O'Brien about civil disobedience, which we didn't get a chance to talk about in his conversation around grassroots organizing. And this week, as I mentioned, the templates and other resources from Rich Foss will be in that LinkedIn group. They'll also be on the Facebook page. So next time you're on LinkedIn, please check out our group and join. Also, Twitter. You know, there's me and the hashtag, and you can follow me on Twitter. The hashtag, of course, is Nonprofit Radio. If you want to know who the guests are going to be each week, I send email alerts every Thursday on the Facebook page. My voice just broke. Thursday, like I'm 12 again. And you can sign up for those email alerts. I just said that on the Facebook page. And then you'll know in advance who the guests are. Maybe you don't care. I understand. You may just be subscribing and you don't really care who's going to be on because you know that the guests are all going to be smart and that the host is in question. But you can always count on good guests. I'm also on Foursquare. If you want to connect with me on Foursquare, I'll see where you are in the world, and you can see where I hang out. Check me out on Foursquare. And that is the end of Tony's Take Two for Friday, August 24th, the 36th show of the year. We have Gene Takagi and Emily Chan. Gene is the principal of NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco. He edits the popular nonprofitlawblog.com, and he's GTAK, G-T-A-K, on Twitter. Emily Chan is an attorney at NEO, and she's a principal contributor to the Nonprofit Law Blog, and she is the American Bar Association's 2012 Outstanding Young Nonprofit Lawyer. I don't know why she's still on the show. I'm certain you could do better than this now that you have that appellation. You can follow Emily Chan on Twitter. She's at Emily Chan. Gene and Emily, welcome back.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hello. Emily, you're still coming on the show. Thank you for that.
Even
after you got the prestigious award. Let's see. We're talking about fiscal sponsorships. If you ever needed evidence that the contributors choose the topics, this would be it. Fiscal sponsorships, a little technical, but I'm willing to go into it. What is, Gene, a fiscal sponsorship?
Well, I'm going to try to stay out of jargon jail here,
yeah,
Tony.
Good luck. We're already there. Fiscal sponsorship. Let's define this.
Well, in its most common form, it's really a way to start a nonprofit project without creating a whole new nonprofit organization. So basically what happens is you've got a charitable project or an idea that you want to implement. You bring it to a charity willing to serve as the fiscal sponsor and who's willing to operate that program within the organization. So it becomes an integral part of that organization, and you reserve the right by contract to be able to move the project to another fiscal sponsor if things don't work out. Or you can even move it into your own nonprofit organization that you form once you know that the project is viable. It's a great incubator.
Okay. You cut out a little bit there. It's a great incubator, I believe is what you said, right?
That's right.
Okay. So we have the sponsor. Is it the sponsor and the sponsoree? Is that how we should be referring to these two?
We usually refer to them as the sponsor and the project.
Sponsor and project. Okay. We want to keep our terms straight. Okay. And could, Gene, could the project be another charity? Or that's not how it works?
Well, the idea,
like a smaller charity. Could it be a smaller charity?
Form another charity. You don't have to apply for tax exemption. You're just actually running a program that you've introduced to another charity. And so you're kind of head of that program, but the program is owned by the other charity, with the caveat that you can take that program and bring it to another charity if the relationship sours in some way.
Okay, okay. Now, Emily, I'm going to guess we would only want, as a sponsor of our project, an established charity.
Yes, picking the right fiscal sponsor is a huge part of getting the advantages of a fiscal sponsorship relationship. As Gene mentioned, they have a lot of control over the project. They take on a lot of responsibility generally with like the admin and all the back office things. And they're also managing the funds that would help fund your project. So you definitely want to pick someone, a charity that has a good reputation in the community, has some experience possibly with fiscal sponsorship already, so they have the processes in place, and one that aligns well with the mission. Otherwise, you're going to run into certain problems.
Sure. Well, and I would imagine a charity wouldn't take you as a project if there wasn't mission alignment.
Hopefully not. That is a big part for the fiscal sponsor to be sure that they understand why they're taking on certain projects. Sometimes, you're so eager to want to help a charitable project that you do start to go outside of your own mission without, taking care of your organization first.
That's risky. Yeah, mission creep. Yeah. Mission creep. Okay. What should a charity be looking? Oh no, wait! I want to ask you, Emily. You mentioned that the sponsor manages the money, so the money doesn't belong to the project; it belongs to the sponsor.
That's correct. So, as Gene mentioned, it's typically a project that doesn't already have tax exempt status.
Right.
It just wouldn't really make sense in that situation. So, essentially, the fiscal sponsor is taking in money for the charitable purposes of the project, but that fiscal sponsor, in order to not essentially act as like a conduit or to collapse and basically give money to a non-exempt entity, they have to have discretion and control over the funds. So there's a certain level of oversight that the fiscal sponsor should be exercising with the project to make sure that it's, operating properly, that the money is being used the right way, and that at every juncture, essentially, when it does use the money to fund the project, that it's making that decision as opposed to just letting it pass through.
Okay. And when you refer to the non-exempt entity, that's the project.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Let's stay with you, Emily. So what's the advantage for an existing charity? Because our listeners are charities mostly. And when you guys were first on, the very first show that you two were on, we talked about alternatives to creating a new 501c3 charity, and we just barely touched on this subject. So we have talked about other alternatives to creating a charity, but what's the advantage to an established charity, Emily, to be a fiscal sponsor of projects?
For the fiscal sponsor, it's really about furthering that sponsor's mission. So again, we talked about mission alignment. If you find projects that further, the charitable purpose of your organization, then that's a huge benefit for the fiscal sponsor. Additionally, they do take generally a cut of the funds to take care of that back office stuff. I mean, because they're taking care of, let's say, you know, payroll, you know, their insurance is maybe covering a project, all of these things.
So they do take
some money as well. It's not really a money maker. Again, it really should be about furthering the mission, the charitable mission of the existing sponsor. But they do take some money generally in order to cover those costs.
Okay. So now, Gene, I assume we can just look to the Internal Revenue Code, and that will lay out these fiscal sponsorship responsibilities and relationships.
Actually, no, Tony. Fiscal sponsorship is not defined in any laws. I don't think any state laws, and definitely not in the Internal Revenue Code. So it's all about the contract. So you want to make sure that you're working with an established fiscal sponsor who can establish the right contracts to comply under the regular 501c3 rules.
Holy cow. All right, so there must be things that are supposed to be in these contracts. And again, we're, you know, our listeners are the charities, so if somebody's going to take this on, this fiscal sponsorship, because they do see mission alignment and the things that Emily described, what's your advice around creating this contract if there's no statutes governing this relationship?
Well, this may sound a little self-serving, Tony, but you've got to talk to a lawyer if you're going to enter into this arrangement for the first time.
Does that lawyer have to be the outstanding young lawyer of 2012 from the American Bar Association?
Well, you can't go wrong with
that. Right, that's right. You absolutely cannot. She's outstanding. I mean, it's in the title, so we know. But in case you don't happen to have access to Emily, although it's the internet, there's no reason anybody shouldn't be hiring Emily. But all right, so this is definitely a legal relationship, and you need a lawyer drafting this contract.
Right, and to understand your responsibilities as a sponsor, there's a great book out there from an attorney colleague of ours, Greg Colvin, called Fiscal Sponsorship: 6 Ways to Do It Right. And there's an organization called the National Network of Fiscal Sponsors that publishes guidelines for fiscal sponsors and their best practices, including what to put into a fiscal sponsorship agreement and policies. And those are definitely things you'll want to check out.
Okay. And how does your friend, your colleague, spell his last name, Greg?
Colvin, C-O-L-V-I-N.
Okay.
And he's the guru of fiscal sponsorship.
Okay. 6 ways to do it right. But there's probably dozens of scores of ways to do it wrong, I'm sure.
In fact, we actually put out a blog post saying 6 ways to do it wrong, so there definitely are.
Oh, did you? Okay. Oh, that's not a copyright infringement?
We had Greg's permission.
Do you do intellectual property work over there at the nonprofit exempt organizations law group?
Not at all.
You don't? Oh, that's very convenient. Oh, okay. So it could very well be a copyright infringement. No, I'm sure it's not.
We'll need a lawyer.
No, it's fair use, I'm sure, or something. I don't know. Who knows? Okay, so Emily, let's go into a little detail about structures around this sponsor-project relationship. And just, we have about 2 minutes before our first break.
So what does it look like?
Yeah, the structures, there's models.
Yes, there are. There are a handful of models. It actually comes out of that book that Greg Colvin wrote that Gene mentioned. The most popular one is the one that we've basically been discussing, Model A, also called the Comprehensive Fiscal Sponsorship or Direct Project. And it's when the charity basically houses the project.
Okay.
It takes it in-house.
In terms of all the management and the insurance and all those things that you laid out.
Right. So it would be just like any other program it's operating, except for that caveat that it's a relationship defined by contract, and there is a contemplation that the project may leave at some point.
Okay. I don't know. Model A, not a very clever name. I would have thought Greg could come up with something better than Model A, but all right, we'll work with it. He's the guru, so we'll work within what do I want to call this? This is the... I can't think of the word. I'll think of it later. Okay. And so all these things that you talked about before, these all have to be in the contract, right, in terms of management and responsibilities and insurance and oversight and all this?
It should be. And again, it just helps to lay out exactly what this relationship is going to look like because of the fact that it's defined by the contract. I mean, any fiscal sponsorship could look a little different from another one. So it is important to contemplate as much as possible at the outset as opposed to finding those problems once you, you know, start trying to do this.
Okay. And the one that interested me that Gene mentioned a couple times is the right to leave the sponsor.
Yeah, so that's very important for both the project and the sponsor to understand what terms and conditions might apply for that. So in some cases, maybe the sponsor is going to require that the project finds another 501c3 entity to house it. Maybe they're willing to do some other kind of due diligence to grant those funds that they held for those charitable purposes to the project. These are all things that you really want to think about beforehand.
Okay. Rubric. That was the word I was looking for. Model A is a rubric. This all falls under the rubric of Model A. I knew it, the word would come to me. Rubric, of course. We're going to take a break, and when we return, Gene and Emily stay with me, and we continue talking about fiscal sponsorships. That's another rubric.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from Speak Spin Radio. Speak Spin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens, and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on Speak Spin Radio.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
How's your game? Want to improve your performance, focus, and motivation? Then you need Aspire Athletic Consulting. Stop second-guessing yourself. Move your game to the next level. Bring back the fun of the sport. Help your child build confidence and self-esteem through sports. Contact Dale at Aspire Athletic Consulting for a free 15-minute power session to get unstuck today. Your greatest athletic performance is just a phone call away at 801-604-0294 or visit aspireconsulting.vpweb. Motivational coaching for athletic excellence. Aspire to greatness.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back. We're talking to Gene Takagi and Emily Chan, our regular legal contributors, about fiscal sponsorship. I want to send live listener love out to Lillooet, British Columbia, Canada. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing it. If it's Lillooet or something different than I just said it, I apologize. Last week we had Ontario and Ottawa. Where's Saskatchewan? Why is Saskatchewan and Manitoba never checked in? Alberta, never checked in. We need to get these provinces listening live. Gene, let's turn to you and see what else we might flesh out about other models around fiscal sponsorship. So since we have the very rich Model A, there must be a Model B.
There are. So Model A to Model F, those are the rubrics.
Okay, the rubrics, the lackluster rubrics. I'm sorry for your colleague. I'll stop calling them lackluster. So, okay, what does Model B matter, or is Model C better than B, or how does this work?
Well, Model A is by far the most common form.
Okay,
you'll probably see that in like 80 to 90% of the cases. The next biggest is Model C, which is called a pre-approved grant relationship.
Model C. This is you cut out a little bit there. This is Model C is in Charlie.
Model C is in Charlie.
Okay. B is in Bravo.
Correct.
B is in Bravo is not as popular as C is Charlie.
That's right.
So shouldn't C be B?
It kind of flows from the structure of the relationship.
All right. I don't know if we can recommend this book anymore. No, I'm kidding. Okay, tell us about Model Charlie.
Model Charlie is a way that an existing nonprofit that still doesn't have tax-exempt status, perhaps it's applied to the IRS but hasn't received a determination yet, can start to get funds. Now, the sponsor can act as an intermediary, if you will, receiving grants intended for the project, but foundations aren't willing to give to that project until it has its own 501c status. So it gives it to the fiscal sponsor. The fiscal sponsor re-grants it to the project, but it has to use its own discretion and control in order to make that re-grant. The foundation has put the onus on the fiscal sponsor to do all the due diligence.
Okay. Emily, how does this differ from Model A, Alpha?
In a lot of ways, actually. So going back to Model A, the project is not its own entity. It's really just a program, essentially, that's being operated by the fiscal sponsor. So all the employees, all the volunteers, all the liability, it all sits with the fiscal sponsor.
Right.
In Model C, you have more separation. So as Gene mentioned, it's its own entity now. The project may be, just a taxable corporation. It might be in its period right now where it's waiting for its 501c3 determination. So a lot more of the liability from that program that it's running, that charitable project, sits with the entity, the other entity, not the fiscal sponsor.
Ah, okay. So there's a shifting of the responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Different. That's how it's different than A. Okay. Emily, what are some examples of fiscal sponsors? Like, is a community foundation a fiscal sponsor, or could it be?
It could be. There is no real limitation on who could be or what type of entity could be a fiscal sponsor. Generally speaking, you'd see it more commonly in just 501c3 entities because they're able to get those contributions that can offer a tax deduction to individuals as well as bring in some private foundation grants. So you see it a lot with 501c3 entities, but as far as the mission of those entities or what it is that they're doing, there's no real limitation on that.
Okay, and we have just a minute left, Emily. Where do we usually see this conversation begin? Does it start with the CEO of the sponsor thinking about bringing in projects, or does it start at the board level?
I think it actually starts with the project approaching entities out there that either have already decided to do it, but I think most commonly it might start with the project that is looking for a fiscal sponsor. Gene could shed some more light on this. He actually sits on the board of Community Initiative, which is a fiscal sponsor.
Okay, Gene, we have just 30 seconds. Do you want to shed some light as Emily cast it upon you?
Sure. There's a website called fiscalsponsordirectory.org, which is a good place to find a fiscal sponsor in your area or in your area of service. So that's a good place to go to. Community foundations often engage in fiscal sponsorships, and sometimes they're sponsoring projects that are collaborations amongst many existing nonprofit organizations.
Okay. We have to leave it there. But that website, again, was fiscalsponsordirectory.org. Gene Takagi, principal of NEO, the Nonprofit Exempt Organizations Law Group. Emily Chan, an attorney at NEO. Gene and Emily, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony.
It's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next month. And I also, of course, want to thank Rich Foss for being on the show. Next week, we're pre-recorded because I'll be on vacation in beautiful Block Island, Rhode Island. Next week, we'll have, I had a great interview, but I didn't get the job. Suzanne Felder was with me at fundraising day this past June. She's a consultant in outplacement for Lee Hecht Harrison, and she has advice around job search. Then, as I mentioned earlier, storytelling with Rochelle Charette, founder and executive director of Char Charette. They have built a culture of compassionate storytelling to help their members through their cancer diagnoses and treatments. And Rochelle will have really valuable ideas on helping your charity create stories and who's best to tell them. And she has her own touching story as a two-time breast cancer survivor. I want to shout out one more live listener love right here in the studio, Indianapolis, Indiana, in the studio. Actually, Carmel, Indiana, to be exact. Live listener love in the studio. You know that I host a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy? Did you know that? Did you know? I do. It's Fundraising Fundamentals. That one is a 10-minute monthly podcast, and it's only devoted to fundraising topics. I have a summer series going on grant seeking. The latest is building relationship with foundation program officers, and the first two were researching foundations and writing winning proposals. It's called Fundraising Fundamentals. You'll find it on the Chronicle of Philanthropy website. You'll also find it on iTunes. Continuing to wish you good luck the way performers do around the world, last week was Chaukas, which means chicken in Australian, in slang Australian. Do you remember why they say chicken? You're going to have to go back and listen. I don't have time to tell you. Today from Spain, mucha mierda, a lot of shit. It comes from the success of a play. People would arrive at shows by carriage. And what pulls a carriage? Horses. And what do horses leave behind? Shit. So the more of that you have, the better your show is. So I wish you mucha mierda for the week. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. With this kind of content, it's hard to believe we have a creative producer, actually. But there actually is one. But she's not responsible for these language lessons and this performing. That comes from Janice Taylor. So I want to thank Janice Taylor. Sam Leibowitz is today's line producer. The show's social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. Oh, how I hope you will be with me next week, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from SpeakSpin Radio. SpeakSpin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on SpeakSpin Radio.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio Program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.